This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. And now it's time for our very first Charismatic Creature Corner. Sorry. It's going to be a fun segment. Some of our favorite stories about creatures, bees, bats, birds, even the bacteria in your gut. Well, and starting this week, we'll be featuring one charismatic creature a month. And by creature, we mean anything. Animals, viruses, carnivorous plants, you name it. And by charismatic, we really mean intriguing, charming, worthy of your curiosity. But we'll let you decide if a creature makes the cut. Making the case for today's creature is our charismatic creature correspondent, Science Friday's own Ella Fetter. Hi.
Hey, Ira. Sorry about all that alliteration. So we asked our listeners on the Science Friday Vox Pop app for suggestions for creatures, and they had a lot.
Yes, please talk a lot more about the tardigrades.
I'd like to learn more about tardigrades.
Pangolins.
Narwhals.
Tardigrades.
And I would like to know more about the emperor penguin.
Four-legged snake.
The wolverine.
Dumbo octopus.
Also, I think known as the water bears.
Musk turtles.
Brown Japanese marmorated stink bug.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So first, thank you to everybody who submitted suggestions. You can still submit them on the Science Friday Vox Pop app at the end of this segment. So a lot of people were hoping for narwhals or penguins or tardigrades were really popular. And I totally get that.
Yeah.
I really like them too. But these creatures would not be particularly challenging for our very first Charismatic Creature Corner because they are undeniably oozing with charm.
I get it.
And speaking of oozing, that's my segue. That's for you. We did get this message from Ronnie in Countersport, Pennsylvania.
I am curious about slime molds. I have heard that they solve mazes, and I'd like to know more about creatures who do problem solving without having a brain.
So, Ira, today I am here to convince you that slime molds are charismatic creatures. I'm going to have some help from two researchers. I'm going to talk to you about one slime mold in particular.
Okay, but first you have to tell me what exactly is a slime mold.
What is this? Okay, I'm going to start by telling you what is not a slime mold, okay, or what a slime mold is not. It's not a mold, actually. That's a misnomer. It's not a plant or an animal or a bacterium or any kind of fungus. It is a protist, which actually does not mean a lot. The kingdom Protista is kind of it's like a junkyard for the natural world. It's where we stick all of those creatures that are really hard to classify. So slime molds are kind of a blobby thing. You can find them in leaf litter, growing under logs, inside rotting wood. There are a lot of different species with delightful names like dog vomit and wolf's milk. But today, we're going to talk about one species called Physarum polycephalum, which is the many-headed slime mold. So to learn more about them, I actually called up a researcher in Sydney earlier this week, Tanya Laddie. She studies collective intelligence. And just to paint a picture for our listeners, here's Tanya explaining what these look like.
So they're yellow. They're really mucousy and sticky. And I mean, if you touch them, they just kind of goop up your hands, really. I mean, it's not something you really want to be touching at all. They move so slowly, you can't quite see them moving. They have what I think is a lovely floral smell, but everyone else tells me is gross. So yeah, they basically just look like mucus. That's really what a slime mold looks like patterned mucus.
So it doesn't sound great. They can actually be really, really beautiful. We have some pictures up at sciencefriday.com/slime mold.
So they look like patterned mucus. So far, so good. I hear you're getting... They're getting trendy as pets in France. Is that right? What do you need to know to have them as a pet?
Yeah, that's what I heard from a researcher in France, that they're the new Tamagotchi pet. Okay, so if you're going to have a pet, which I do, slime molds like darkness, moisture. They also really like rolled oats, apparently. They really go wild for these. No one knows why. I hear the American strain really likes the Quaker brand for some reason. So if you give them a rolled oat, they will slime over to it, engulf it, and pulse, which is apparently something they do when they really like their food.
And don't they? Like, what do you have to avoid with them?
You want to avoid light and dryness. So they like it dark and moist. So like our listener, Ronnie, mentioned, these goopy, mucusy things, they can do really incredible things like solve mazes. But here is the truly astounding part. These creatures, organisms, if you want to call them, they are just one cell. They are one cell with a lot of nuclei.
All the yellow goo, even when you see them and they're like, you know, half a meter across in size, all of that goo is one single cell. It's a unicellular organism. And it can get to those sizes because it has these millions of nuclei that just keep dividing inside of the same membrane. So you wind up with this enormous creature, but because, you know, they're all sharing a single sort of envelope, it's still technically one cell.
So as you know, most cells are actually invisible to the naked eye. You need a microscope to see them. The ones in Tanya's lab get up to about 12 inches in diameter. And there is one slime mold species that allegedly, this needs to be independently verified, but allegedly it could cover 10 square feet and weigh as much as 44 pounds.
Get out.
Allegedly.
44 pounds, 10 square feet. That's pretty cool. Right?
I mean, that's, yeah. It's a one cell. That's astounding. So this is where I think it gets truly interesting. Slime molds for one giant goopy cell are way smarter than they have any business being. And it took people a long time to notice. They were used as model organisms in labs for decades, but really just to study cell mechanics. They're really handy because, one, they're, as we mentioned, visible. You can also cut them up into little pieces, and then each of those little pieces becomes its own independent slime mold. And people weren't really thinking about things like, what can a slime mold do? How do they behave? Until a Japanese researcher in 2000 changed all that. So to tell us more, we have Simon Garnier. He's an associate professor at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, and he works on swarm intelligence. Simon, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Hey there, welcome.
Pretty good, thank you.
So just, To start us off, what did this Japanese researcher, Toshiyuki Nakagaki, what did he do in 2000 that got people so excited?
Well, he published a paper in Nature, I believe, that showed that slime mold was capable of solving a maze, right? So I don't know, in newspapers, sometimes you have these little games where you have to go from one end of a maze to another end, finding the shortest possible path. And that's a complicated task to do, even for human adult. But the slime mold was capable of doing that task in what seems like a very short amount of time for slime mold.
Now, I heard about them recreating the Tokyo Railway Network. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So imagine you're the mayor of New York and you're trying to redesign the subway of New York City, which, you know, is necessary, I think. You are going to face a big challenge. The challenge is you're going to have to build a network that's both, usable and robust to any form of disturbances. So imagine like when the L train stops working, you need to be able to route your the users through different routes. But at the same time, you want it to be cheap. So you don't want to build too many lines, but you want enough connection between the lines so that people can go around. So that's a problem that is very complicated to solve. But Nakagaki in 2010 published this paper where he showed that slime mold is capable of finding the sweet spot, the right balance between building a network that is very robust, very capable, but at the same time relatively cheap to build. And that was this paper was done by comparing the property of the network built by slime mold to the property of the actual subway network in Tokyo.
So I find this really impressive, although I find their ability to learn even more impressive. Maybe you could tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so the ability of optimizing things is something that is common to a lot of organisms. But the ability to learn is not necessarily present in, at least that we know of, in all organisms on the planet. And so for a long time, it wasn't clear whether slime mold was capable of learning and was capable of encoding information and use that information for later use. And quite recently, actually, there's been a number of studies that have showed that it's capable of, for instance, anticipating events, which means that that you have to learn when an event is likely to come. But there's also other studies that show that slime mold is capable of learning that a bad stimulus is actually has no consequence. So it's a phenomenon that we call habituation. I don't know if I should explain what habituation is here.
Please do.
Yeah, habituation is simple things, right? Like if you had a cocktail party and then there's some annoying voice in the background or someone singing bad music, at the beginning it's going to be extremely annoying to you, but as this sort of stimulus keeps being repeated, at some point you're going to habituate. Your reaction to that stimulus is going to decrease over time, allowing you to still function properly in an environment even though there is annoying stimuli around. And so that experiment that was done by, I'm guessing that's the French researcher you talked to, Audrey Dussutour, showed that slime mold doesn't like salty environment. If it has to cross a salty environment to find food, we'll over time learn that it's okay to cross these dangerous salty places in order to get access to food. So it will habituate to this negative stimulus in order to get access to resource.
So you're sort of winning me over. Anything else you can tell me about the crate?
We're making the case here. What if we want to convince Ira that slime molds are charismatic, is there anything else that he should know or think about?
Well, I think for me what's absolutely fascinating with that organism is, as Tanya described it, it's, you know, it has the consistency of snot, essentially. It is bright yellow, which is not a very serious color. It doesn't smell very good. It tastes even worse. It tastes like old salad.
Wait, pause.
You've tasted them?
Oh yeah, of course you have to. If you're a biologist, you have to taste what you're working on at some point. well, as long as it's not going to kill you, you should probably try at least once. So this organism has nothing impressive. When you look at it, when you see it for the first time, it doesn't seem to be moving or doing anything impressive. But then if you start posing problem to that organism, you see that it's capable of solving these problems in ways that are very close to the way our best algorithms are capable of solving these same problems. So for me, that's the impressive part of it, is that it's probably the least sexy organism to look at. And at the same time, it's extremely, extremely smart, given the fact that, again, it's just a sack of lipid and proteins that is blebbing around in the environment.
There you go. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from WNYC Studios, talking about slime mold with Ella Fetter.
So I had a question for you. I think it was earlier this week, our video producer, Luke Groskin, gave me a little slime mold, dehydrated, to keep as my own pet. It's now the office pet. And I brought it into the studio today.
It's a yellow little streak, and you fed it an oatmeal?
So I started by adding a little bit of water. I didn't add enough because it dried back up. But today, added more. Uh-huh. It got really slimy. Can you see this?
Absolutely. It's grown in size since earlier in the day.
It's all veiny and, slime moldy. So we're wondering if you had any tips for successfully raising our new, unnamed, and we'll take suggestions from listeners for the name as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's an organism that's actually fairly easy to grow. It likes humidity, right? If it's not humid enough, it's going to dry out. But actually, the good thing is, even when it's dry, you can resuscitate it. It's a complicated word for me. You can make it back come to life with just a little bit of water.
Where do you get one from?
Oh, you can get one in any of the woods around New York City or New Jersey. You can also order it online. There's a number of companies that will ship you a kit of slime mold for, I don't know, maybe $10 or $15.
There you go.
So it's very, very easy to get access to. And once you have it, if you find the right condition, you can grow it indefinitely, essentially.
I cannot
wait. So a little bit of humidity. It likes warmer climate, so, you know, somewhere around 78, 80 degrees, it's a good temperature for it.
So,
and then a lot of oatmeal.
I've given it a single flake so far. So we're just about out of time. We've only scratched the surface for slime mold. There's a lot more. And if you want to go to sciencefriday.com/slime mold, you'll learn more. I think that's about it. I hope I've convinced you, Ira.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for bringing all your guests on the show.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you, Simon, for coming on. Simon Garnier
is for having me.
Associate professor at the New Jersey Institute of Technology, and also a special thanks to Tanya Laddie from the University of Sydney.
Thank you both for joining us today. And we want to ask our listeners, what do you think? Are slime molds charismatic? You got something even better? If you have a creature you think that would make a great contender, send us a tweet at SciFry or leave a voice memo on our Science Friday Vox Pop app. And one last thing, Science Friday has been partnering with educators since 2016 to develop free classroom resources based on the stories you hear each week here, right here. This year is no exception, so if you know an awesome educator, or maybe you are one yourself, don't be shy, please apply. For the Science Friday Educator Collaborative, you can find the application, more info at sciencefriday.com/educator. And we're hard at work on our big end-of-year show. This year, we're not only recapping science from 2019, but the best moments in science from the whole decade. You know, it's going to be 2020, end of a decade. We need your help. So go to the Science Friday Vox Pop app. Tell us what science story or discovery you remember most from the last 10 years. That's the Science Friday Vox Pop app, and you could be included in our big end-of-year, end-of-decade science wrap-up. Get the Science Friday Vox Pop app wherever you get your apps, and you can have your voice on the radio. Charles Berkowitz is our director, our senior producer, Christopher Intagliata. Our producers are Alexa Lim, Christy Taylor, and Katie Feather. Technical and engineering help from Rich Kim and Kevin Wolf. BJ Lederman composed our theme music. If you missed any part of the program, of course, you can subscribe to our podcast or ask your smart speaker to play Science Friday. And of course, you can always email us, scifry@sciencefriday.com. One more time, go to our, download our Science Friday Vox Pop app. Tell us what science story or discovery you remember most for the last 10 years. And we want to hear from you. Leave your voice, and maybe you will be on the radio and on our podcast. Have a great weekend. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.